This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Welcome back, everybody, to the People Who Speak radio show. I'm your host for tonight, Steve Johnson. The People Who Speak show normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific and 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS radio network. You can participate during the show with calling questions for our guests toll-free in the USA and Canada on 1-888-429-5471. The number again, 1-888-429-5471. Or you can join us live in the government and politics section of Pal Talk, the largest free chat program in the world, where we have a virtual radio room, the People Who Speak radio show, where anyone may participate during the show. This is a fantastic show tonight. I'm more excited than Larry Silverstein's lawyer the day after 9/11. We're talking to a very special guest right here, a 9/11 researcher for over a decade, having helped produce the 9/11 documentary Loose Change, and responsible for independent research into the Hollow Towers theory of how and what happened to the Twin Towers on 9/11. He also runs the Let's Roll Forums at www.letsrollforums.com, where he encourages everybody to join, to observe, and participate with the end goal of sharing research, opinions, and information about 9/11. We are talking tonight to Mr. Phil J. Han and his associate, Mr. Larry McWilliams, about the Twin Towers and casting a closer eye on what really happened on September the 11th, 2001. Welcome to the People Speak show, Mr. J. Han and Mr. McWilliams, sir.
How you doing? Thank you, Steve.
Excellent. Good to have you here. We'll be taking audience questions after the first half hour, but my first question to you, Mr. Phil, is what got you started into researching the September 11 attacks?
Well, originally, I think it was the Pentagon. You know, there was issues with the Pentagon. I think it was Thierry Meyssan, you know, who pretty quickly put up a website, you know, questioning, the idea of a airliner hitting the Pentagon, that there, you know, really wasn't, you know, damage. So that's kind of where I came in. How about you, Larry?
Well, I came in pretty much. I found the Let's Roll forums in probably 2004 or mid 2004, shortly after you'd opened the website, not the forums. It was Let's Roll.com, and it was on from there. So, I mean, it was, by that time, it was quite apparent. You had already seen a lot of other things, and there were already good resources on Let's Roll forums, even by late 2004.
Yeah, right. Because I remember that Let'sRoll911.com was the original website where I first found the missile pod theory when it first came out about 2004. And that was probably one of the first websites devoted to 9/11. Were you out there very early on?
Yeah, that was, I put that site up, I think, in late 2003 or early 2004.
Wow.
Let'sRoll911.org, .com.
Okay. Right. What can you share with the audience about Daniel Lewin, the CEO of Akamai.net, and his connection to 9/11?
Well, there's not a lot. I mean, he's one of the individuals that's kind of flown underneath the radar. Daniel Lewin was also one of the commandos that we were told that helped rescue the Israeli passengers on the Entebbe flight in
right.
Uganda, Larry?
Yes, that's correct, in Entebbe.
Mm.
So,
and he was,
so
yeah.
He was somewhat of a lore figure for many years before 9/11.
Right, right. So what is the evidence that you found that a lot of businesses cleared out of the towers shortly before the event? Can you elaborate a bit more about this to the audience?
Well, we did a FOIA request to the New York Port Authority, and it was basically an occupancy audit. And we asked them for the in times and the out times of all the companies that were in the towers, you know, from the time that they went up to the time that they came down. And, you know, what we got back was, you know, pretty shocking. You know, I'd have to go back over the research. This is from memory. But by the time that the 1993 bombings happened, I believe there was only 11 companies in the North Tower, and, you know, the same thing with the South Tower. They were extremely unoccupied, although Wow. even back then we were told that they were, you know, highly occupied. There was floors that you know, were never rented out for almost the entire life of the tower or the life of the tower, according to the, you know, occupancy audit. Larry, do you want to?
Yeah. Well, another main item for people to get to the bottom of this is the 91st floor. We're told that the 91st floor of the North Tower, where George Slay worked for the American Bureau of Shipping and his coworkers, it leads you to research on the gelatin bee thing, the Lower Manhattan mm-hmm. Culture Council, and the artists who in fact inhabited that floor and have a lot of photographic evidence to support the fact that they were there. And it clearly is an undeveloped floor. It's all, you can count the interior columns. You can see that no interior development has been made on that floor. Yet it's featured in a great number of firsthand accounts of escape from the towers. Yet we can see clearly that there were no American Bureau of Shipping offices on the 91st floor. So, you know, we really attacked it from many angles. The FOIA told us that obviously occupancy was never what it was touted. Photographic evidence and also the lack thereof. The numbers just don't work, Steve. If 20 to 40,000 people worked in those towers for 30 years or nearly so, the amount of photographic evidence of the interior would be, you know, it'd be voluminous. There'd be a great deal. It would, you know, there would be websites today dedicated to people who used to work in the towers, posting their memories and their photographs. You had the greatest view in the world, and the number of the amount of photographic evidence is minuscule.
Did I hear you guys correctly in saying that there was only about 11 businesses actually occupying the North Tower at the time? Is that correct?
In the 1993 bombing. And what's interesting about that FOIA request is it shows that, you know, the buildings went from having occupancy issues in 1993. You know, so from the time that they went up till 1993, they had, you know, occupancy issues. They were underused utilities. But from the time that they were bombed in 1993 till the year 2001, you know, by some reports, they were at 110% occupancy, but they were certainly full. And that's what we were told on 9/11. And yet there's all sorts of evidence and proof to show that that's not the case.
Wow. So how much of an impact did your research have on the 9/11 truth community? Has anyone ever picked this up and ran with this story or this information?
Oh, not really, you know, this information in particular. A few of, you know, I'd have to answer that with a no. What was the impact on the 9/11 truth community? I mean, I think me and Larry would both agree that they rolled up their sidewalk and went away. I mean, it kind of killed the whole 9/11 truth movement, because the 9/11 truth movement was basically just a fraud that was put up by the opposition. And all those websites that, you know, were there and still are there claiming that they're part of the 9/11 truth community or 9/11 truth movement, they're funded, you know, by corporations and governments, our government, and, you know, individuals who were part of, you know, the hoax of 9/11. They went up as fast as the buildings came down, and they controlled the, you know, arena. And,
right.
and they used that arena to shoo people out, independent.
Steer the discussion in ways that tended to end up being circular.
Goodness me.
So when the truth came out that the whole thing was a hoax, you know, from the victims, you know, to the towers themselves, I mean, it kind of deflated, you know, that whole web of lies that were out there. I mean, you know, we can give you reasons, you know, tangible reasons why there wasn't any desks found in a debris pile or chairs found in a debris pile. Not one chair, not one desk, not one computer, not one 5-gallon bottle from a water cooler was found in a debris pile. There probably should have been 50 to 70,000 phones in the towers, but no phones were found in the debris pile. You know, when you know, the tangible, you know, when you see this kind of debris lack, you know, that's just not there, and it's supposed to be there, you know, the obvious question is, you know, was it there when the buildings came down? And it couldn't have been, or else it would have been in a debris pile. And right. they use things like this to open up to all sorts of other whacked out theories. You know, that somehow there's a weapon out there that can turn the contents, the interior of 210 story buildings into dust in just a matter of seconds.
Gosh. So the evidence is that you're saying that a lot of the businesses cleaned up and cleaned out and moved out of the buildings in preparation for the demolition of the Twin Towers. Is that true?
Well, essentially over the course of many years, it could have been done very easily over the course of many years. Well, you know, what we've also found, as Phil's already stated, that for the most part, there were not a lot of businesses there. If we look at the list of companies who were supposedly left in the building at 9/11, you know, many of them, the top trading companies, are all related to the intelligence community, and certainly with $42 billion in cover up money, there was a fine budget for faking a few hundred employees in the Trade Center. Because of course they were paid for having suffered that loss, these big companies were, so that's an instant budget for participation.
Well, how much of a role? Sorry, go ahead.
There was a $7 billion victims compensation fund, and there was a $32 billion business compensation fund. So what Larry's saying is they have $40 billion to play with as a budget to make this hoax work.
Is it true that Larry Silverstein was about to go bankrupt just before the Twin Towers came down? Do you know much about that?
I didn't know he was about to go bankrupt. I mean, I think it's doubtful, because it was Larry Silverstein who came up with, I think it was an $89 million down payment for the World Trade Center. The question you really want to ask about with Larry Silverstein and his participation in the whole 9/11 scandal is, why was he there? 6 weeks prior to, those buildings had always been owned by the New York Port Authority, you know, for the whole life of the building. The New York Port Authority paid to put those buildings up, and, you know, they were always under their control until 6 weeks prior to 9/11. The reason that Larry Silverstein is there right at the end to take ownership of the buildings was because there was going to be a $3.5 billion-plus insurance payout. And they didn't want that money to go back to the New York Port Authority because, you know, by transferring ownership of the towers, they retrieve that money, and it goes to them rather than the city.
Wow. I do believe a lot of the businesses are actually at a function with Warren Buffett at Offutt Air Force Base as well. A lot of the big corporations and CEOs from the companies that were in the buildings, they were having a day off and had a party to go to watch it all on television. Is that not true?
Yeah, I mean that's part of the 9/11 lore, that the big wigs were all at the Air Force Base with Warren Buffett, and then that, you know, George W. flew in there later on in the day and all of that. But once you understand that those companies had been long since packed up from the World Trade Center, then that becomes a little bit less important. Because everybody was essentially gone. You know, one of the things that helps bring it home is the smoke pipes and pyrotechnic fires, essentially fire sticks that we've discovered in in the building. And the photographs are very clear, and it's a photograph that runs, still running on the LA Times website. It's not something we doctored up or created. That's on a floor that at the time of 9/11 is supposedly occupied by Marsh and McLennan traders. Uh-huh. Hundreds and hundreds of traders working on this floor, yet we can clearly see that pyrotechnics for the hoax of 9/11 are installed. Are we to believe that, you know, while they were installing these pyrotechnics, that Marsh and McLennan traders are still working in the building? Why, of course not. There was no, how did they possibly rig those towers for a demolition? It was simple. There was nobody in the way.
Right, right. And of course, they did have the shutdowns to do elevator cable work. They were doing cable work a couple of months beforehand, having massive shutdowns of all the power and of all the security systems. Is that not true?
Well, if you're doing a cable upgrade, we were told that they were doing a cabling upgrade bandwidth, you know, for the computer system at the World Trade Center.
Uh-huh.
You know, why do you need to turn off the electricity for that? I mean, the story doesn't even make sense from, you know, out the gate.
I will say that we've had the person who promulgated that particular story, Scott Forbes, whose story was uncorroborated for 9 years, and then suddenly, when he came under a great deal of scrutiny, another guy popped up out of the blue and then quickly disappeared, who also talked about a power down story. Scott recently has visited the forums, but it seems he disappeared very rapidly when just the most gentle of questions were asked of him. So,
gosh. So you guys have gone
down, into... The power down and the Ace Elevator stories, and there are several more in the knowledge of 9/11 lore that were created by the so-called 9/11 truth movement to give credibility that the two things could be done at once, that people could be working in the buildings and they could have a demolition. It's all just to convince us that people did die.
When you look at the debris pile that was left when the World Trade Center came down, not only were the contents of each tower missing, you know, some 50,000 desks, chairs, phones, cubicles, water coolers, refrigerators on every floor, the carpet, but, you know, the floors themselves, the trusses that held the floors are missing. There's supposed to be some 46,600 trusses, you know, in a debris pile. And, you know, we've been able to find maybe 12, 14 in the debris pile.
What?
The same thing with, you know, the floor pans that the concrete went in. There was some 14,000 of those or so. Those are almost entirely missing from the debris pile. You know, you'll search in vain looking for a great big huge piece of concrete, you know, in the debris pile of 1 and 2. There's only one picture that shows one large chunk of concrete, you know, but we're told that each of the floors all the way up to the top were nearly 1 acre in space. So when you consider the fact that, you know, even the buildings themselves are missing in the debris pile, you know, you have to really think hard and long on why that is. I mean, everything was missing in a debris pile. You know, the desk, the chairs, we have firemen and that were supposed to have done the cleanup, and we have firemen after firemen telling us that, you know, even the people turned to dust.
You know, vaporized, yeah. People who are vaporized. I remember reading an article about that.
Right. Well, where that argument falls apart is very simple. The possibly crushed under, you know, 100 floors of material may really destroy a human being. But the people who were supposedly, the hundreds of people who were trapped on the upper floors were certainly not crushed by hundreds of floors worth of material and should have, you know, been very much intact, certainly not turned to dust by any means.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Plus, you know, we're told that the, you know, basements of World Trade Center 1 and 2 were destroyed, and the brunt of the wreckage, you know, ended up in the basements of the But that's clearly not the case. When you look at the, you know, debris pile picture, you'll see that, you know, both bottoms, the basement sections underneath the top of the bathtub, which is some 6 floors up or 70 feet, you know, from the bottom, are mostly intact, you know, and that the debris, you know, didn't go into those lower floors.
Plenty of photographic evidence in the mall, which was in the first sub-level, that it's entirely intact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's, you know, we're told that there's streams of molten metal, but if you start searching for pictures showing the, you know, what we're told, you know, they're not there. You know, one guy said that he saw molten steel running down like a, you know, like a river in a foundry. All right.
Yes.
But, you know, he's also in the same video that these guys are talking about vaporized people, that all the people turned to dust, not just the desks, not the chairs, not just the water coolers and the refrigerators and the 70,000 phones, you know, not all the jewelry and all the people and all their clothes, but, you know, everything turned to dust, the floors, the trusses, you know, all this stuff. It's like 13,600 pounds of stuff per floor, you know, just, it's gone. It's not there.
An acre of stuff times 220.
Wow. I remember listening and watching that live, the time that it happened. It was nighttime here in Australia. And I do remember the reporter saying, as you suggested earlier, that in both of those towers, there's at least 50,000 people every day going to work there. So this was simply a lie. They were spreading a lie. There simply was not that many people in the building. Is that true?
Well, access was carefully controlled, especially after the 93 bombing. You had to have a pass to go to a certain place. There was a great deal of traffic, of course, going to the restaurant on top of one tower and the observation deck on top of the other. But that's what we've found, that there was traffic in the mall levels, the subway tube, and then at the top of each building. But these were trading companies. They were restricted access. Nobody could just wander into these floors. So if there was nobody there, there would be no way for anybody to have a clue. We found a video that a gentleman put on YouTube, and it's not really a video. It's a series of photographs taken exactly 1 week before 9/11. And he walks around the towers and takes photographs throughout the afternoon. And it's absolutely clear that you see at rush hour, you see an increase in the subway tube, and you see people stopping in shops on their way home from work. But what you don't see is the elbow-to-elbow rush of people, tens of thousands of them rushing out of the towers at 5 o'clock. They are completely and totally absent.
Wow, that's some really good evidence.
This is why they also had to shut down, you know, lower Manhattan and close the bridges. Because had they not done that, nobody would have ever seen streams of people, you know, coming from the World Trade Center. There's supposed to be 50,000 people there. Okay, when you start looking at the pictures of what happened in lower Manhattan when they closed the bridges and people had to walk over, okay, it gave you the impression on TV that those people were coming from the World Trade Center.
Yes.
They didn't say that, but that's the impression given, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, but these are people that were in the streets of lower Manhattan.
Right.
Yes.
So had they not done that, you know, people might have started saying, well, where's all the streams of these people coming out of the towers? 50,000 people. You know, that's also why they did it early in the morning, you know, where there's plausible deniability on why, you know, there is so few people there to begin with. And then there was another common theme that all the, you know, crisis actors and shills, you know, said, you know, well, I was at school, taking my kid to school, first day of school, you know, yeah, I was taking my kid to school, you know, it was a nice day, you know, beautiful day, I took the day off, you know, that was Willie Rodriguez's claim.
Uh-huh. Now, I wonder if you guys have heard, about 2 weeks ago, there was a video where Larry Silverstein actually admitted he had building plans for the new WTC-7. He'd made those plans in 2000, a year before all this happened. So he actually had envisaged that they were going to need a new WTC-7 building. Have you seen that video?
Well, I mean, let's ask if that's, you know, normal business, you know, and I would say that it is. You know, when you have a prime piece of real estate and you think that you can, you know, do better, you know, you think that you can build it into this, you know, and you, and that's your desire and you've got the money to make it happen or the connection, you know, that's how business works. You know, they make a model and then they can show other people and get investors. So, I mean, I don't think that that's unusual at all in and of itself. But, you know, what is unusual is just the way that Larry Silverstein came in, you know, 6 weeks prior and took ownership of the towers for $90 million and then ended up with a $4.2 billion settlement. He tried to get $7 billion, $3.5 billion per tower, but, you know, he lost that battle. And when he, you know, appealed, he got an extra $700 million. So he ended up with $4.2, probably closer to $4.3 billion.
Wow. And, of course, there's the admission that he made on PBS. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
All for that, you know, initial investment of $90 million. But go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's all right. That's all right. It's a good day at the races for Lucky Larry, I guess. And of course, there was the admission on PBS on the documentary. You know, that'd been such a terrible loss of life. I spoke to the fire chief, and we decided the best thing to do would be to pull it. So we stood by and watched the building collapse. Even though WTC-7 wasn't hit by any plane, there was a few fires, perhaps. But do you find that suspicious that this huge building, a steel structure building, came down in 8 seconds? That's 10 floors a second. Do you find that suspicious at all?
Well, yeah, but what's more suspicious is, again, if you look at the debris pile on WTC-7, the tallest part of the debris pile is crumpled facade, and it's about 35 feet high. Now, this is a 48, you know, floor structure that we're told, you know, had a special asymmetrical webbing of steel supports at the bottom, you know, because they were built over a power plant. And then the building was built over that. And then it was the regular structure that went all the way up. But, you know, again, you know, when normally when you demolish a building like this that has the floors and trusses and, you know, all the other things, normally it's about 10% of the height of the building. So the World Trade Center, you know, they should have had debris piles, you know, 110, 120 feet high. And, you know, maybe the tallest point in the World Trade Center is, you know, maybe 35 feet. And it's not really a great big huge pile. It's just kind of what's left of the core.
Well, and the 10% number reflects demolitions of buildings that are gutted of absolutely everything except for essential support members. And you still end up with 10%. Had the buildings actually been full of contents, 110 floors worth, 10% would be, a very small number.
Wow, wow. Please stick with us, guys. This is the People Speak Radio Show. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, talking with special guests Phil Jahan and Larry McWilliams, and they know their stuff, live on Internet Radio. And we'll be right back with our guest and audience questions after this short message break.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak, every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
You're listening to the People Who Speak radio show, coming to you live across America and across the world in real time. I'm your host, Steve Johnson. We're back with our very special guests tonight. They are independent 9/11 researchers and have done a massive amount of research into the Hollow Towers facts. Welcome back there, Phil and Larry, sir.
Good to be here, Steve.
Excellent, excellent. We have a question from Buzzy Krongard in Langley, Virginia. Mr. Jahan, did you suggest that Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth is a fraud?
No, not specifically, but, you know, personally, I really have a lot of issues with their organization.
Uh-huh.
They get all the money in 9/11, you know, activism, and they do so very little with it, in my opinion. I think Richard Gage has done, you know, a lot of, you know, interesting things, and, you know, he acknowledges the fact, you know, that we're talking about here tonight. Richard Gage, acknowledges the fact that there is everything missing in the debris pile and that that's a big issue. So I'm thankful for that. But no, I didn't specifically. Did you say anything, Larry?
Well, not specifically. I've raised a few questions, you know. For instance, I'm not sure I understand the end goal of all the fundraising there, which is to demand a new investigation. And I find a great number of flaws in the logic there. Are we going to demand a new investigation of those who, you know, perpetrated the hoax? I mean, we could talk about the first investigation, but, you know, since the whole thing is a hoax, who are we going to ask to investigate it besides ourselves? And our own investigation is, you know, pretty well put the facts out there. I just missed the entire point of the exercise of asking for a new investigation. That's really all I've ever had to say on the matter.
And is it true that in your research, you guys have done a lot of freedom of information work? You've accessed a lot of the documents that spell out what really happened. Is that true?
Yeah. And we've worked together with other people that have, you know, done these as well. But one of the biggest, you know, breakthrough with FOIA, you know, that we had was with the occupancy of the towers themselves. Like I said, they showed that they were, you know, mostly uninhabited, in 1993 when the bombing happened. And, you know, on paper that, you know, they, you know, were still had occupancy issues, but between time of the bombing and what the occupancy request said on paper was different than what we were told in the media and, you know, the backstories of the towers themselves. The, you know, Freedom of Information Act showed that the buildings were mostly unoccupied for the life of the towers. They tried to fill in some of the blanks, you know, toward the end. But when you look at the whole, you know, what we received back, it was just shocking to see so few businesses there to begin with. We're told that these buildings, I mean, went to almost full occupancy from the time that they went up. I mean, that certainly wasn't the case if you could look at any paperwork, you know, other than what we were told in the media. So what was true on paper, you know, wasn't always true, and the what do you call that? The backstory of the towers or the legend of the towers?
And another thing we looked at were the New York commercial real estate numbers. You know, if you remember, New York was bailed out in the early 70s, in the mid 60s, late 60s, when the towers were being built and came online. the demand for New York commercial real estate was way down, and people were doing business elsewhere when they could. And if you put 1 million square feet on the market, it would be a tremendous glut, even in Manhattan. 1 million square feet of office space would still affect the market. Yet we never, ever found any evidence that the market, you know, we did early on find real estate people in lower Manhattan vehemently fighting the tower's construction for exactly that reason. They suddenly went away and never to make another sound. But the numbers don't bear out the fact that all of that real estate came online. The market was never glutted.
Right, right. So we do have a question.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. Go ahead. Let's take the question.
Okay, we have a question from Orangutan in Kingston, Jamaica. He asks, which version of Loose Change did you guys help out with?
The very first one. It was kind of like a group effort almost. You were here at that time, weren't you, Larry?
Yeah, in the periphery. I wasn't directly involved in that.
I mean, I initially gave Dylan the money that he needed to stamp out the first 1,500 DVDs or so. And we as a forum basically just all pitched in to help with the movie. It was the very, very first one.
Right.
The later ones, he cut out the stuff about the pod and the missile and some of the other issues with Flight 175. But overall, most of the versions of Loose Change were, pretty much the same. One was a rehash of the other, again and again. Except for that major difference between the initial Loose Change and those that follow.
Right. Do you guys still stay in touch with Dylan Avery and the guys from Loose Change?
Haven't talked to Dylan probably in, 4 or 5 years. I think the last time I, even had any kind of communication was when a friend died, that we both knew. I sent him an email and got a response. But that was probably 2 years ago. So I don't even know what he's doing nowadays.
Well, one of the guys who's done a lot of great work exposing the heads of the snake, I suppose you would say, is Luke Radowski from We Are Change. Yeah, have you had much to do with him at all?
What was that intro that you said before, Luke Radowski?
One of the guys who does a lot of work for We Are Change is Luke Radowski. Have you had much work with him?
No, I haven't. I know of him. Incredibly, there's a fella that was one of the 9/11 victims, and he's virtually identical to Luke Radowski.
Oh,
you remember what that fellow's name was, Larry?
I was just trying to think of what the gentleman's name. It sounds remarkably like Luke Radowski, but I can't remember his name. Right? You can do a search. Let's Roll Forums, Luke Radowski, and it'll take you straight to that thread. I'm quite sure.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find this right now while you take another question. But it's tongue in cheek. When you see the pictures, I don't think there's any doubt that it's the same person. And that's what I mean, the 9/11, truth movement, is basically crisis actors, and, it always has been. I mean, virtually the whole movement, I can't really look at any organization that, that I can think of right off my hand. Can you, Larry?
Not really,
that
no.
I can say that they're not part of the network. I mean, they've controlled the show.
William Rodriguez, Bill Heitman, these are people who were literally in place on day one, literally.
The Harley
Willie
guy.
Willie does the CBS interview with his dust mask on and his clean shirt and all of that on the afternoon of 9/11. So and there's a lot of great research on Willie's story. Forums.com.
The Nade brothers were brought in, just to basically help document the backstory of the World Trade Center.
You know, I mean, virtually everything, you know, that they've done was a hoax. They're the ones who are responsible for the firemen's interview, and I'm pretty sure that they weren't even firemen, saying that all the people in the towers turned to dust, along with the desks, the chairs. I believe that comes from Nade footage, doesn't it, Larry?
It does. Yes, it does. It absolutely does.
You know, they also established, you know, the firemen, you know, in you know, the towers. But when you look at the footage that's there, okay, and then you see other footage showing, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of firemen held at bay, you know, off to the side, you know, and they're not allowed to go into the building.
The iconic photograph of the firemen going up the stairs that was in the Daily Mirror on 9/12 and appeared in every newspaper in the U.S., which was one of the Labriola photos, which, oddly enough, out of the tens of thousands of people all working, and these are traders who are affluent, in an age where digital cameras were all the rage, and every one of those guys should have had a digital camera in his pocket, the only photographs taken in the World Trade Center on 9/11 were taken by only one person.
Wow.
And they include that photograph of the fireman filling up to his near certain death. Turns out that fireman is just fine and received an award in Britain for his heroism. I don't know what he was heroic about, because he didn't, you know, continue up the towers and die. But isn't that hard to imagine that we have somewhere around supposedly 40,000 people in a building in the age when digital cameras were just, like I said, all the rage, and no one took any pictures.
Goodness me. Now your website that you run there, letsrollforums.com, is an absolute font of information and a huge resource of knowledge. Is there any other research that you came across on your forums that you'd like to share with us today?
Oh, we could never get through it all. I mean, we'd have to go on for a week. Here's a fun snippet, okay? And I was saving this for a rainy day. You know, it's kind of out there in piecemeal, but, you know, of all the Pentagon victims, if you take the pictures that they use in the 9/11 memorial, and sometimes you have to go back to the web archive to get those, but they still have their EXIF data on them, and look at the EXIF data on the pictures, you know, you can tell that about 50 of the pictures, you know, which is the majority of them, because there was only pictures for about half the victims, you know, have EXIF data that show they were created on 2/15/2000.
Wow.
You know, that's the last time that they were edited, you know, and on the picture it says, you know, family, you know, there's a little sidebar, 4 pixels or so, and it's
right.
You know, family photo, military times, you know, so of course it had to go on after they pulled it from a file, right? I mean, because they're using it for 9/11. So, I mean, you can see that, I mean, 50 people right there, right off the bat, you can show are fraud. You know, they were created, you know, 18 months prior to 9/11.
Wow.
Then the question becomes, if you have real victims, why should you create any frauds? Why should there be a Bill Heitman and a William Rodriguez? Why should there be fraudulent victims when you have real victims?
Hmm. What's your guys' personal opinion about 9/11? Do you guys believe that 19 Muslim hijackers with box cutters could have brought those buildings down?
Well, yeah, if they had, like, you know, 30,000 pounds of explosives, you know, to water the bottoms with, you know, but, you know, or if they stole nukes from an air base.
I think the number of people who still believe that is in the, I think it's in the teens percentage-wise. But you have to understand that 9/11 was a multi-pronged psychological operation. Sure, it fooled some people into thinking that Muslims did it and we should hate them all and go fight wars, but that's a small percentage. The other prong is, for other people, you're meant to believe that your government killed 3,000 of its own and doesn't care who it kills to attain its objectives, so you better shut up and stay in line and go along with the program. So regardless of what you believe, the psychological goals are met. They it elicits cooperation from the masses.
Right. Have you guys, we got a question from John in Canada. Have you guys have heard of any candidate or seeking nomination for the president that has been acknowledging 9/11 truth?
That's kind of a joke. I mean,
yeah.
No, they can't do it by nature. I think can you think of a single person? I mean,
I think at one time Donald Trump came out and had a few things to say, but this was many years ago, and you know, it's not mm-hmm. like he's been a proponent or anything like that. Everybody else is on the inside and wouldn't dare have anything like that to say, I don't think.
They're all part of the same network.
Yes.
It's interesting. Just you were talking about that iconic photograph of the fireman coming up the stairs a second ago, Larry.
Mike, I can't think of his last name. His name's Mike something or another.
But, you know, this is tongue-in-cheek. You know, you can do with it what you will. But if you Google Mormon missionary injured in Brussels bombing, okay, it's a fellow named Chad Wells, okay, who looks just like the fireman that's coming up the stairs. Okay. That's something that just was recently on the forums and chat, but you know, I think it is the same person, Chad Wells. You can tell by the eyes, you know, the eyes are just dead giveaways. And that's why he was chosen, because he's got that face. He's got that iconic looking face.
Mike Kehoe is his name. Mike Kehoe is the fireman's name.
Yeah. I think it's Chad Wells. If that's even his real name.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, 9/11 was, you know, from, you know, the beginning of the day to the end of the day, a hoax. You know, the buildings, you know, were an illusion. They were not fully occupied. They were not, as a matter of fact, on 9/11, I think it's safe to say that there was, you know, they were empty, gutted. They were ready for demolition, and when they came down, they had no people inside.
Or so, very, very few, anyway. Go ahead.
Steve, I think something else that a lot of people miss out on is the very history of the towers. You know, it was David Rockefeller himself who was the initial proponent and insisted on demolishing Radio Row and building the towers. He wanted to call them the World Trade Mart. But Rockefeller, this was an important project. David Rockefeller was sleeves rolled up, involved in the beginnings all the way back to 1958.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had to have his brother elected governor to be able to push this through and have the Port Authority involved. People don't really realize the roots of the World Trade Center. Go back to, Governor Keene said it was a 30-year conspiracy, quipped to a reporter, and he was telling the truth. The roots of 9/11 go all the way back to David Rockefeller and the demolition of Radio Row in 58 through 1960.
Right, right. We have a question from Frank in St. Louis. What, in your guys' minds, both Larry and Phil, was the ultimate motive for 9/11, and who do you think benefited from it the most?
Well, I think that's a real easy question to answer. You know, all we have to do is, you know, turn and look what we've done for the last 15 years across the Middle East. I mean, you know, we basically started revolutions. Those that we haven't liked, we've kicked out. Those that, you know, we couldn't kick out, we invaded. I mean, and we're still not done.
My answer to him would be to create a list of countries without European central banks in the year 2000, and compare that to the history of the last 15 years, and I think he could answer his own question.
Do you guys see much hope on the horizon as far as people waking up to what a scam is going on with these kinds of false flags? Do you see much hope on the horizon at all?
Define hope.
I think we do, or we wouldn't have spent such a huge chunk of our lives and time trying to find answers. Not to speak on Phil's behalf, but we're really just guys who just want to know. We just really wanted to know. Didn't care what the truth was. We just wanted to know what it was. And somewhere deep down inside, we've got to believe that we can get this message out, and people, because people can, every time I show it to someone, people can see it for what it is. Of course, we have some hope in us that we can get this message out.
Yes, of course. And I do believe you spend a lot of your own personal money in getting the websites up and getting this information out there to people. Is that not true, Mr. Jahan?
Yeah, I spent a lot of money. You know, most of it's lost, you know, potential income. But, an incredible amount. I mean, probably over the last 15 years.
Phil has dedicated his life entirely to the website for the last 15 years. I'll just go ahead and say it. That's the honest truth. Phil has dedicated his life to the real truth of 9/11. Not for personal gain, but at a tremendous loss. Again, just because we're stubborn people who just refuse to give up and want to know the truth. Wouldn't you say, Phil?
Yeah, followed, you know, like everybody else, we followed rabbit trails for years, you know, and, you know, our breakthrough came in, you know, 2009, when we just, you know, put everything on the table and decided to reexamine it, you know, and it wasn't long before we started finding all sorts of, you know, new things that changed the whole 9/11 paradigm. You know, it's not really any longer a discussion about controlled demolitions or WTC-7. You know, it's the nature of the buildings themselves. You know, of course they were demolished. I mean, somehow or another. But the nature of the buildings themselves and the nature of what we were told, that there was people inside, when all these things were missing from the debris pile. You know, we were told that on 9/11, above the 91st floor, which was the cutoff point, you know, where the jet hit, Flight 11, we're told that 1,300 people were trapped. So you have 1,300 people, and all the pictures that we see of the North Tower before it came down, we only see 20, 25 people at the windows top, you know. I think you might count up to 30 in one, and that's by far the most. But you have to ask yourself, where were those other 1,300 people that were still alive and, you know, trapped in the top of the tower? And the South Tower fell first, and then the North Tower fell. So the top of the North Tower should be on top of the debris pile down below, correct?
Yes.
So those 1,300 people that were on the 91st floor above in the North Tower should, by all logic, be scattered all along the top of the debris pile. Correct?
We have a question here from Mike in Ohio. Who do you guys think is closer to the truth in your opinions, Judy Woods or Richard Gage?
Well, if that's the choice, I mean, you know, Richard, but... Larry's probably got a southern saying
I just the only thing I have to say about Judy Woods is her entire thesis is based on the work of Hutchison, and you can look at the video, the proof video of the Hutchison experiment, and you can see the wires, and I don't think there's anything more that needs to be said. If your theory is based on research, levitation research for this an energy beam, and I can see the wires doing the levitating, that's pretty much speaks volumes.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll also say they've come out with some very outlandish ways to explain the fact that there was no debris, and that's one of them. That and, of course, the age-old and even more ridiculous mini-nuke theories that pop up from time to time are the only, you know, essentially the only defense to explain away the fact that there was no debris, other than the easy explanation that it just simply wasn't there to begin with.
And to kind of poison the well. It's kind of like throwing a turd in a punch bowl.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With Judy, I mean, it's like, this is relevant information. People need to know this. People need to understand this. That's why, you know, earlier, you know, when we were asked about Richard Gage, you know, I mean, you know, he acknowledges at least that much, that there's serious issues with what was in the debris pile and that there's missing components of the towers, and that at best what was in a debris pile, you know, is not, it's just not there. I mean, like it should be. So
right.
he at least acknowledges this. Judy Wood, you know, is just craps all over it. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I mean, it's ridiculous that an energy beam, you know, completely turns to dust the interior of two towers, you know, that are 110 stories tall, you know, and then later WTC-7, you know, and not just the contents turn to dust, but the people, the carpets, you know, the trusses, the floor pans, the, you know, 4-inch cement floors, the 220 acres of concrete in each tower. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's a weapon that I don't even think it can exist.
Okay, we've got time for one more question.
The geometry never works.
Right. We got time for one more question. Do you guys support the Stop Funding of Israel?
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, I'm all for the United States not spending another dime on Israel, but just I'm pretty much that way all through our foreign policy. You know, why are you giving money? Why are we giving this money to anybody?
How about stop funding everyone? How's that?
yeah, I agree with that.
Stop funding Israel especially, you know. I'm all for that.
Well, it's been great having you guys on the show. You've been listening to the People Speak radio show with special guests Larry McWilliams and Phil Jahan. I'd like to thank them and remind all the listeners to visit their website at www.letsrollforums.com. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Mr. Phil and Mr. Larry.
Been a pleasure. Thanks for having us, Steve.
God bless you. And do stick with us next week when we have the two guys back on air for some more questions and some more information about 9/11. Big thanks go out to the producers, Mike, Doug, and Donald, to all my friends throughout the world, and all the guys who give me so much support. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. You can tune in to my own channel called on YouTube called Stop Funding Israel. But for me for now, take care and bye until next time.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief of I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.